Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. He's not alongside me again, but Mr. Jack Piattelli is my co-host here on Chasing the Goal. Jack, how's it going, man?
I miss you. You're not in studio today.
I will not be in studio for a long time, as we covered on the previous podcast. I'm not going to embellish it. It's a catastrophic knee injury, so I won't be going anywhere for a while, but we're doing our due diligence and getting the pod out there to you guys after a long break, summer break, because the schedule's kind of kicked us in different directions. And we got a great guest today, new Harvard assistant and former Terp, Nick Grill. What's up, man? How are you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate you guys having me on. Excited to talk lacrosse and anything you want me to, especially Tillman and pseudo stories. So pumped to be here.
I also forgot to tell you that I love your brother.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Dude, he is the king of short kings, man. He is our everything. He really is. Like I hear so many great stories about him too, post playing and playing, from all the places he's played, and I covered him in the pros and in college for a little bit as well. So it's big ups to him as well as you. But I just wanted to get that away off the top here.
No, for sure. For the short guys, he walks all the other guys could run. So we owe a lot to him. I love him. Obviously, he's my brother. But no, he's the man. He's hard to keep up with, I'm sure, with all the energy that he brings. But no, he's awesome. I love him. He's one of my role models. So I can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah.
Now, Nick, you grew up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And back when you grew up, lacrosse probably wasn't as popular then as it is today, but it's grown quite a bit in the New Jersey area. Did you also play other sports? Were you a multi-sport athlete? Tell us a little bit about how you got started with lacrosse in high school and how many sports you played and what made you decide to make a career in lacrosse.
For sure. So I didn't start playing lacrosse until second, third grade. My main first love was football. I loved youth football. I played Pop Warner all the way through from 5 years old to 13 years old, and then played through high school. I stopped after my freshman year. But football was my first love. The contact, kind of just the early summer days where you're just going to be sweating and contact, all that type of stuff that comes with it. I loved it. Lacrosse started to take over once I started to get into middle school and high school, started realizing that I was pretty good and had great coaching to kind of allow me to have that as my avenue. I had great youth coaches like MG Hollingsworth back in Bridgewater. And then when I got to high school, Coach Chuck Appel, who's a brand name, was one of the legends in New Jersey, is a defensive coach. He coached my brother. He kind of started to build him what he would become. And then I was really excited to be a part of that. So played football, but once I got to high school, lacrosse was my main thing. I loved it, still love it today, and just kind of took off from there. So I get a lot of things, and I like to think I get a lot of values from both, but football and lacrosse were my main two things growing up.
Can you talk a little bit more about your recruiting process to Marquette?
For sure. So wasn't recruited too much. It was still in the early days. I mean, BJ definitely helped pave a road for a shorter defenseman, but I don't think shorter defenseman was still a thing that was popular at that time. So when I was getting recruited early, a couple of military academies, I think Air Force was there early on, Rutgers obviously being 15 minutes away from campus and having a full Rutgers alumni coaching staff at Bridgewater Raritan High School with Coach Appel, Matt Appel, and the Cardillas. Definitely, I guess, build a connection there. But other than that, not too many people were super interested. Marquette was always, I think, the place for me because of Coach Joe Amplo. The success that he had with BJ, building that program to winning a Big East championship within 5 years of starting the Division I program, and what he could do with BJ, I saw very similar for myself with how to cover guys at X, potentially using my skills set to an advantage instead of a detriment. So not much interest with recruiting, but Coach Amplo, I think he's one of the best recruiters and one of the best coaches in the country for a reason, sold me on Marquette, and it was pretty much history after that.
Yeah, it's Amplo. I asked you for Tillman and pseudo stories, but Amplo, man, Amplo is also a character. Like he's one of the guys in lacrosse. I remember Big East Championship. I'm talking to him in the presser afterwards, and I'm like, can you discuss your decision to switch from like playing this to a zone, to a man, to like a hybrid? He goes, no. He's like, we didn't do that. And I was like, yes, I've never heard a coach like just straight up be like, I'm not answering your question to me. And everyone that was there laughed. And I was like, that's what's happening. I don't know. And then I've talked to him since afterwards, and he's very cordial. I think, like, cause they lost the game that day. He was not wanting to talk about it, but he's just one of those guys. And now he's at the Naval Academy. He's just pulling guys left and right. I mean, the early recruiting, we can talk about this a little bit, but the early recruiting window for the service academies, they're getting kind of first crack at guys in a lot of ways in the 25 class that opens up September 1st for everyone else. And they've already got some guys in the line that are pretty impressive. Can you just kind of talk a little bit more about what your best Joe Amplo story is? Cause I want to hear it.
There's definitely a lot. I think, like you said, he's wears his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, you can tell that he's from Long Island. I think you can just by talking to him, but being at the Naval Academy, I think he's a little bit more buttoned up now, which I think suits him well. But Joe Amplo's story, I think my brother probably has a little bit more insight into that type of stuff. Watching from the sidelines when I was growing up and in high school and watching those, there's definitely a couple of interesting stories with that, with slamming pylons at the box or like ripping lids off of his brims of his hats or stuff like that with his teeth, as he was a little bit energetic and a little bit fiery with calls that the refs were making. But just with Coach Amplo, I think I owe a lot to him, especially starting me just with the passion of wanting to coach and stuff like that. Like I said, he's one of the best coaches in the world. He was on the world staff for a reason. He's an unbelievable defensive coordinator and defensive coach. And with the early recruiting, I think I remember talking to him a little briefly about it this fall with kind of how it works for them and stuff like that. And yes, like you said, I think they do get kids and their first crack at them is definitely an advantage. But one thing that really stuck with me is that a kid that we're going to get in the early process is him talking, potentially they'll get later on as well. Like a military kid's a military kid, a service kid is a service kid. So definitely advantages to it. Just talking, building those relationships. That's part of our profession is building relationships, especially with kids that we're recruiting. But, and I think Joe Amplo just does that regardless, because that's just how good he is as a recruiter and just who he is as a person.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you're going into now the Ivy League after being at Vermont for a year as well. Big difference, I think, in terms of not caliber of player, but like type of player, right? Like you're the mindset of those two schools is a little different. I mean, listen, Vermont's technically a public school, and you're going into one of the most elite places in admissions in the world, in Harvard. What are some of the things that you've already done to adjust to that?
First and foremost, I think just regardless of recruiting, like grades are super important, and Ivy League obviously is no different. That first and foremost thing we're asking, looking potentially for kids and just hearing about it is transcripts, right? Just how your grades are going to look. And we need a consistent theme with your transcript, how you're doing in school. Not only is just your last semester of your sophomore year going into your junior year important, but your entire transcript's important. So I think that's the biggest thing, I think, going into the Ivy League is that your transfer has to be buttoned up and ready to go, right? You got to be making sure you're showing consistent excellence of being a student athlete, and student comes first for a reason. I think that's been told everywhere that like you have to be really good in the classroom, and going into the Ivy League, that just heightened, right, to the nth degree, just because of how important it is. It wasn't Vermont. We definitely wanted kids with good grades as well, because like you said, as a public school, that definitely helps with financial aid and stuff like that. And being at Binghamton as well, again, a lot better of a school, a very good public school in the SUNY, but very, really good business school there too as well. So just looking at transcripts, and just if it isn't buttoned up, if it isn't great, then unfortunately we can't do anything about that. And then that kind of like cuts where we're looking at, who we're looking at, and going from there right away. So I think that's definitely the biggest adjustment, is just what's your transcript look like right away? What are your test scores? Because that's going to matter a ton right now.
Nick, you had a lot of great coaches growing up in lacrosse. Any of your coaches have such an influence on you that it's something that you wanted to do? Or is this something you always thought you wanted to do?
No, I didn't decide to start thinking about becoming a lacrosse coach in college until after my junior year of college. I think before that, I was like, I have no idea what I wanted to do. I was jumping majors at Marquette before I transferred to Maryland. I didn't really know exactly what was my passion. Was at some point I was like, maybe I'll just become a pilot. I mean, why not, right? Who knows? But when I got after my junior year of college and started thinking about that as an avenue, my brother started coaching a lot more and doing the club scene out in California. He's doing that right now still. So just thinking about the other side of that with the college path and avenue was definitely interesting to me. And like you said, a lot of youth coaches and then growing up with all the coaches that I've had have definitely influenced me. I talked about football earlier. One of my youth football coaches, Coach Kevin Johnson, I think was a big, I guess, figure in what a coach can be and look like, and definitely someone that I think is one of my role models. Just showed that passion, energy, showing love on your sleeve can be something that guys can really flock to, but can also be something that is allowing you to push guys to be their best selves. And that's something that that my football coach showed a lot. And then Coach Amplo at Marquette did that as well. Like we talked about, he shows emotions on his sleeve, and love is definitely one of them. And that was something I think really influenced me, that I'm pretty emotional as well. So something like that can definitely happen. Coach Appel, like I talked about, it showed that lacrosse is business. I mean, being exact, being right on time, making sure that you're getting your stuff done throughout high school, I think creates a program and a culture of winning. And I think that's something we did at Bridgewater. We won a couple state championships there, which I think really was a testament to what he's built. And then very similar with Coach Tillman, right? I mean, at Maryland, you make sure that it's a program built on accountability, guys holding each other to the highest standard. Be the best isn't just something we say or it's in the locker room. It's something that's lived, right? And off the field, on the field, in the classroom. And that's just Coach Tony building that, making sure that the guys understand that the accountability, all that type of stuff, being the best regardless of where you are, is important, right? And it creates what Maryland is today and the program is now. So a lot of things I've learned, especially the coaches I've been a part of, but definitely those guys have really been something that influenced me to be a coach. And then hopefully I could take something from each of them to be the best coach I can be, because definitely not where I want to be as a coach. Definitely a lot of stuff to still learn.
You said that you weren't sure what you wanted to do. What was the trigger? What was the moment that said, I want to coach?
I think Coach Amplo, especially after my junior year, sat me down and we started talking about what I think I would want to do and kind of avenues and stuff like that. And we brought up coaching, and that's something that I've always thought of potentially, just because on the field, I like to think I have a high IQ. I think I have an idea what's going on at all times. I can talk through guys, some stuff on the field and off the field. If I want to watch film, I love watching film. That's something that I do nonstop, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but when we just start talking about that and avenues that he can help me with his connection and his network, I think it's something that really interests me and something that he said he could help me going from like a volunteer and the pathway through that. So that was definitely something that hearing Coach Ampo talk about was really interesting, really exciting. I love the game of lacrosse. It's obviously put me in awesome places and it has had me experience things that I don't think I would have done regardless of if I'd done something else, but I love the game of lacrosse, and to give back somehow is definitely something that also interests me as well.
You played your extra year at Maryland. What was your experience like? Were you in the transfer portal looking for that, or was that kind of like a outside of that deal? Like, were there other suitors? Like, what was that process like for you? Because it's still happening. I had a coach call me the other day. He's like, when is this stupid transfer thing done? And I was like, well, it started in 2020. Right. And if you were a freshman there, it's not just done in 4 years. Like, right. It's going to be a while, right? Yeah. So what was your experience like there?
Yeah, and I don't think the transfer portal thing is going anywhere. I think that's something that everyone's going to have to deal with, even once the fifth year stuff is done, right? That COVID year is hopefully done, I think, after this year. I think it's the last year of it. But it's still something that every coach can have to handle in their own way. So that's not going anywhere. I went to the portal after my junior year. So that's the summer of 2019. So right before COVID hit. So I was going to live out my fourth year, my true senior year there. And then COVID happened in 2020. And I was unfortunately able to get another year there. But going into the portal, Coach Joe Amplo, so we talked about, just left to go to the Naval Academy that summer. So we didn't know who was at Marquette or anything coming back like that. So talking to my family, just was like, why not just put your name in the portal, see what happens. And once that happened, Coach Tillman reached out and the connection was instant. Just hearing what he has to say about Maryland kind of just related to me that it's all about winning and that's all I care about. I don't care about my role or anything like that. I was done with just, yeah, it's about stats or anything. Like, I don't give a crap about any of that type of stuff. Just, I want to win. I want to win at the highest level. And that's what Maryland sold on me. And Coach Tillman was really good at that. And a great connection was formed there. And then the rest is history. I was able to go to Maryland, had a great time, had a great opportunity, met some great people. And was really fortunate about it. So the portal in itself is kind of crazy. Once you kind of go in there, just all the emails and the texts that just come flying around at you. But for the most part, once the decision had to be made, it was either down to going back to Marquette or going to Maryland. So I went to Maryland and had a great time.
I think something that's interesting about going back to what you were talking about earlier about how defensemen are deployed, right? Like the shorter defenseman is kind of a newer thing. And you say that, I think, because when you were shorter and you played like, did you just got kicked to LSM?
Right.
Like, you were just like, I'm going to go play LSM, I guess. I guess my stick skills have to get way better. But I think one of the things that you and your brother helped to pioneer and bring in is that support role being one of your best attributes, right? So when I think about you playing at Maryland, I think about you hitting and being there on every slide. So when you said you're like, oh, I love football, I'm like, yeah, of course he loved football. Like, you watch how he plays. And I think that's important as a message to send out, because I think every defender, and I've had this conversation with so many long poles, every defender wants to be the one. And it's like, hey man, there's only one on the field the whole time. And the rest of you have to figure out your role in a defense. And you're going specifically to a defense where every pole is integral to what you're doing. They're playing angles, they're hedging, they're showing false slides, they're doing crazy stuff under GB. And I think, like, you're a great fit for that program, because not only because you played under Tillman, but because of your skill set as a player translating as a coach, you can now be like, okay, well, you're just as important as this guy. Like, you know what I mean? I think that gets lost a lot in the talk of all these, like, top defensemen. He's a top defenseman. And then, like, you go to college and, like, the guy's not playing, and it's like, well, he doesn't know how to slide.
Right.
He just knows how to cover. So can you kind of expand on that for me and kind of explain that a little better than I did? I feel like I didn't do it justice.
No, I did a great job. And I think kind of growing up, kind of everyone just sees the cover guys, right? That's easy, right? The guys covering the best players in the world, the great cover guys, like, they're easy to spot. But as I coached, right, coaching club when I was in college, or I was coaching high school kids and then coaching guys now, the guys that I always say are the most important parts of defenses are the guys on the inside that just are controlling the defense, right? At this level, and when you get to the pros, everyone can cover, right? Everyone has that baseline of being able to cover. If you can't, you wouldn't be at that level, right? The guys that are able to connect the backside or connect the off-ball type of stuff and able to talk guys through their roles are the guys that create great defenses, right? And that's another thing, talking to Coach Amplo before the USA thing, the USA tournament that happened in San Diego this past summer. Jesse Bernhardt, right, is the epitome of off-ball defense. And playing with him, the Chrome, obviously he was my coach at Maryland. The guy, right, he's a little bit older now, right? Again, hopefully he doesn't get mad at me for saying that. But he may have lost a step potentially on the ball, but whenever he's on the field, the defense is better, right? And that's not just because of him covering the ball at an elite level. That's because the backside is always cleaned up, right? The two slides always ready to go, right? It might not be him, but he's telling someone who maybe didn't see it before, didn't anticipate it as fast as he did, he's telling them to do it right when they need to do it, right? So I think you hit it the nail on the head. The off-ball stuff is just as important on the on-ball stuff, because especially at this level, right, everyone can cover, but the guys playing offense, like, their job is to score the ball, right? And offense, unfortunately, always beats good defense, right? So being able to support the ball in ways, in certain ways, and being able to clean up the backside too, make sure the stuff on the inside is all cleaned up, is that much more important, because the guys on ball, the guys that are dodging, are that much more skilled now.
Yeah, I always tell my kids, like, you get scored on, they get upset. I'm like, it's not your job to stop the ball every time. It's your job to make their job hard. It's your job to make their job difficult. It's your job to pick each other up. But I think defensively, I started as a D coach, and now I'm more of an O coach. And one of the things that I kind of miss is, like, having, like, for lack of a better term, like, meathead conversations with my defenseman, where I'm just like, ah, great hit, man. Hey, try to play this angle or whatever. And then just going, like, I love the, there is a certain, like, beauty in the simplicity of instructing a defense what to do and them acting as a unit, I think is the hardest part to coach. So when you're setting up how you want the defense to play or what you want them to do, How do you get them all on the same page? Like, do you have a tactic for that? I know some people do, like, they tie each other together or whatever. I don't think that works at all. But what are your things that you're telling them to do? Like, what things are you asking them to watch for?
I think there's certain, like, there's a lot of things that a lot of coaches do, right? I think one, at least at a level, like watching film, I think is always the biggest thing, right? I think offenses try not to have tells or anything like that, but offenses are trying to get something out of each formation or each dodge that they're trying to do. So just having a good awareness, a base knowledge of watching film, doing your due diligence before the week, before you play guys, I think really sets a base layer of being able to be successful. But when you get on the field in 6-on-6, I think just being connected, maybe tying each other with string or whatever rope you want to do, that's right. Fine. But I think just having a consistent conversation, being able to talk and open your mouth, right? I think a lot of times now, defense, especially younger defenses, think you have to say the right thing, right? They try to be programmed as robots, right? Saying the right thing, just kind of screaming and not listening, right? But communication, conversations are two-way alleys, right? You got to be able to say something, but also listen for a response, right? And I think that's kind of gets lost on the wayside. When you hear these defenses at the next level, like when you're hearing the mic'd up things in the PLL, right? They're saying things, but it doesn't sound like black and white defense talk. Right. It's just making sure whatever message you need to be said to who you need to be saying it to is being received and they are giving you an acknowledgement. Right. So just saying names. Right. Everyone in the world. Right. The first thing you do when they're babies. Right. You listen for your name. Right. And you react to your name. So saying stuff like that, just having the communication be something that's going two ways and not a guy just in the middle of your defense screaming, I'm hot, and not listening to anyone else, like that doesn't do anything. Right. Just having that communication, just going back and forth between everyone on the defense, everyone understanding the role. I think that's when the best 6-on-6 defenses definitely happen.
Nick, is it more difficult to teach a player how to play on ball or off ball?
I think off ball. I think that as a younger defensive coordinator, I think that's something that I'm still learning at. And I think one of the biggest intrigues and definitely something that I'm excited about going to Harvard and coaching with Coach Byrne is that aspect of it, because he's such a legend at coaching the off-ball position. I take more pride and I think I have more confidence coaching the on-ball stuff, getting my hands on guys one-on-one and teaching stuff that's very black and white, right? Just we want to get guys in certain positions and we want to get guys to places that are very less dangerous than going over the top or stuff like that, right? Where they can see the whole defense or see the whole cage. And being a number one cover guy at times in my career, I took a lot of pride in that and understanding where I wanted guys to go, what angles to take and stuff like that. So I think coaching one-on-one defense is easier just because I'm more comfortable at it. And then, like I said, the off-ball stuff, there's a ton of gray area, right? Teaching guys how to be lacrosse players and stuff like that. Like if you see something, right, there's a multitude of different things you can do. And there's teaching guys what that decision is, how to react to it. There's a lot of gray area in that. So I think coaching on ball is a little bit easier, but that's just me. And I think a lot of defensive coordinators may say something different.
What's more difficult to play, off ball or on ball?
I think off ball, right? And I think that's probably the biggest jump that high school kids see when they get from high school to the Division I level. Everyone talks about the speed, and for sure, everyone's the best athlete at their high school, right? So you know that the ball is going to be moving skill-wise, it goes up, but that just response time goes down exponentially at the Division I level, right? You got to be making decisions potentially before something even happens, right? That anticipation factor, right? That preparation I was talking about with film has to be spot on, because you have to be making decisions in half a second or a goal happening, because the guys at this level are that skilled. Whereas on ball, I think just giving a ton of effort on ball, things just a one-on-one like pride thing, I think, to me. So as long as you're giving full effort, I mean, obviously there's stuff like technique and patience and discipline on ball for sure. But as long as you're getting guys in certain areas, that off ball stuff can be really interesting to guys going into college for their first time. So I would definitely say the off ball aspect.
What skill sets do you need to be an off ball guy like yourself?
I think, like I was talking about, that communication aspect, I think is huge, right? I think communication is very underrated. Being loud, right? But not screaming. Being able to hear and react to type of stuff, I think is huge. That anticipation factor. So being a student of the game, I think is huge for that. Watching a ton of films. So being able to anticipate something before it's happening, I think is huge. Having a great stick, right? The off-ball aspect, knocking down passes, I think is a skill that not many people have. And being able to get the ball on the ground when skips are happening off-ball, and sliding is right. You're creating an odd man situation, getting pressure onto the ball, but leaving potentially guys open on the backside. So having that off ball acumen of getting your stick in the lane and being able to see and know where people are, I think you're huge. So there's definitely a lot of things that go to it, but I think definitely those things are the biggest things.
A lot of kids are going to be listening to this heading into their first fall ball, right? A lot of freshmen are going to listen to this. What's one piece of advice you can give to them going to their first fall practices?
For high school or
high school? Well, I guess I was thinking college, but you know, if you want to do high school too, I think there's probably two different answers, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think the number one for probably both of them is just effort, right? I think coaches see that first and foremost, that if you're just going balls to the wall, you're going as hard as you can 100% all the time. Coaches can work with that, right? I think guys that give effort 100% of the time are guys that are potentially coachable, right? If they can just hear something and take something, and then potentially it doesn't have to be a ton at a time, especially freshmen, when you're going into whether it's high school or college, you're getting flooded with a ton of different things and might seem overwhelming, but just giving 100% effort, whether it's listening, coaching, watching film, asking questions, I think is always huge for me. With guys that I coach, is just if you don't understand something, just ask me something back. But I think effort's always the big thing I look for, right? Because that's something you can control, right? Yeah, may not be able to control your talent or anything like that, but effort's definitely something you can control.
If you don't know the drill, don't be first in line. That's the best. I say it. I feel like I said it every practice because we had a lot of kids coming up from JV to play varsity. And I was just like, if you don't know this drill, do not be the first person in line. And then you look over and you see kids like kind of shuffle. that's the best. But it helps, right? Like, yeah. I feel like in college, it's like an unspoken thing. In high school, you kind of have to hammer that into them.
Hey, Kyle, you were never the first one in line then.
In college, I was. In high school, I was very no. I'm just like, who do I hit? Because I played defense right in high school, and then I played attack in college. And I loved touching. I just wanted the ball. Like that's even when I was a defenseman, I wanted the ball, man. Like it was – I guess that leads into another follow-up I have for you, which is you were talking about getting your stick right. I always struggle to come up with drills for defensemen to do that gets their stick that isn't just like long passing or rollbacks. What's something that you've seen that's helped you or helped you as a coach develop some players that helps long pulls with their stick?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, like guys may or may not have great sticks with the ball on their stick, but the ability to pick up the ball, I think, is one of the most precious things for a long pull, right? When the ball's on the ground, for it to come up defense most of the time, I think, is the most valuable skill regarding stick skills. So that's not something I think a lot of people potentially think is a skill that they can work on, right? A lot of people just have that innate ability of like, I'm really good at picking up the ball, right? And that might be true, but it took me pretty much until when I got to Maryland to really focus on, I'm going to get better at ground balls. And that's what they taught me. That's what Coach Barnard taught me, is just getting reps, right? You're not going to be a master of something until you do it. What is it, like 10,000 times or something like that?
10,000 hours.
So, there it is, exactly. Yeah. Right? So get reps, right? Put in a ton of work of just picking up the ball, standing still, walking, running, using a tennis ball, using a lacrosse ball, whatever it is, right? Just get a ton of reps at it. So when you're on the field, you're not even thinking about it. I think that was the biggest thing, and especially as a pole, right? The guys that can pick up the ball at an elite rate, right? They definitely shown so much more success because the ball's on the ground in your area and it's coming up offense. You're just going to wear your defense down, and that's never a good thing. So I think definitely that's one of the biggest things. Picking up the ball is definitely a huge skill for any pole to have.
What's a drill that you would use to do that?
Yeah. So just like I said, just standing still and picking up ground balls, right? Just picking it up, keeping your stick low, just fist pumping, whatever you want to call it, just getting comfortable of understanding and feeling, having that feeling of the ball in your stick, using tennis balls for 20, 30 times, right? Using a lacrosse ball 20, 30 times, walking 10 feet or walking 10 yards, then running 50 yards and doing it. But just being patient and being disciplined of you're going to do it as many times as you need to for you to get that skill. And I think you've seen all the Maryland poles and how good they are at picking up ground balls. I think that's definitely one of the reasons that they just work their ass off at doing it.
That's the Piatelli drill. That's what I call it. Cause that's what Jack, we had some of your coaches on. I asked them kind of the same question. Like, how do you get the ball handling better for poles or guys that are just starting? And it's two balls, pick one up, drop it, pick one up, pick it up, like just for a minute and then a minute off. And it, honestly, it It's the best advice I can remember having for an entire team, and especially for defenders. Like, they hate, the kids hate it. Like, it's one of those drills where you're just like, harder than
you
think.
You feel it in your arms, right?
Oh, yeah. If you're bending down to pick up the ball, are you serious? I mean, that's Jack and I don't know what that's like. We're attacking. You just give us the ball.
We just get you the ball. That's all that
matters. Yeah. We're not getting that. Get out of here.
Nick, you started playing lacrosse when you were in the second grade. What age do you think is the right time to give a player a long stick?
So I didn't pick it up until fourth grade. I was a midi to start, and then I realized how much running there is, and I was like, I don't know about that. But I got a pole in fourth grade. My brother started playing pole in the eighth grade. I would say probably in like the sixth grade, like going into middle school, I think is probably the best one. I think there's a huge value of getting great stick skills with a shorty before you get to using a pole, and understanding the offensive aspect of things too, I think is a very valuable thing as well. My brother didn't play defense until his eighth grade. Like I said, he was an offensive player until he got to high school. And then one of his club coaches told him to try picking up a stick because they didn't have many at a tournament in the summer, and he just fell in love with it. But he had his stick skills, going two hands with a pole, like being able to punch to the outside and roll back. Like, those are all skills to have that you can get probably faster with a shorty. So I'd probably say around that age, I think that going into the middle school aspect of things and then being able to pick up a pole from there, right? Because when you're younger, everyone can play defense with a shorty. I don't think it's that big of a difference.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. Middle school and developing those stick skills, it's so much easier to go from the short stick to the long. Very difficult to go from the long to the short. And I see a lot of young kids in the first, second grade with the long pole, and you can tell that they're struggling picking up the ground ball, catching and throwing, and they're not benefiting at all. They're not developing any skills. So I used to tell my defenseman to play wall ball with the short stick. Play a wall ball with a short stick and then jump up to the long pole, and it's going to make your game, your skill set so much better.
100%. And I think that's one of the things my brother gives me a hard time all the time. He thinks he has better stick skills than I do, and may or may not be true just because I started playing pole in the fourth grade and maybe I couldn't catch and throw as well as I probably should have, but I totally agree with you. Right. And then a lot of kids, when they pick up a pole, maybe they don't cut it down, especially when you're shorter, right? There's nothing fault to that. So you're playing with a really big stick that's awkward, that's heavy, right? Where you get potentially lazy with your technique and your stick skills. And that doesn't lead to anything that's proper stick technique that you're talking about. So I think definitely holding onto a shorty until you get comfortable and strong enough potentially and you have good stick skills for a pole.
I think it's an advantage too for learning how to play man-to-man defense and even slide packages with the shorter stick. If you're in the second, first grade, trying to slide with that long pole, it gets in your way, it gets tangled up. It's just so it's a lot more difficult to not only develop your stick skills, but understand how to play defense on the backside and playing man-to-man.
No, I think so. And I think that's the biggest thing. I think all defensemen, once they start realizing the on-ball technique and stuff like that, is that it's feet first. Right. And no matter if you have a shorty or a pole, the pole's cut down when you're younger or older, you're covering the ball with your feet. Right. And being able to move, be comfortable with your footwork, depending on where you're on the field, no matter how many checks you throw, if you're not being able to like run with the guy and be patient with your technique, it doesn't really matter. Right. The overhead of the checks might look nice, but when you do it and you miss it and you give up a goal, guys on the sideline like me are not going to be happy. So I think it's all feet work, footwork first. That's my biggest thing.
So Coach Byrne was considered the best defensive coordinator for a number of years when he was at Notre Dame. You're heading into a situation where you're the defensive coordinator. So have you talked to Coach Byrne about your philosophy on defense and his, and is it going to be you working his defensive philosophy or a combination of both?
Yeah. So again, like I said earlier in the podcast, just the opportunity to learn from Coach Byrne, who, like you said, was considered the best defensive coordinator in the country for a long period of time, was exactly why I wanted to be a part of the coaching staff. Because as a 26, turning 27 year old or 25 year old, I don't even know how old I am, just being able to learn and continue to learn, I think, is the biggest thing. And like you said, he probably has his system in for a reason. So me being the hothead coming in and changing something that like that probably isn't the best idea. So I would assume we're probably going to have something lean more towards him. But when we were talking about the position and kind of going into like the interview process, we were on the same page with a lot of things that we were talking about regarding defense. I think we said early in the podcast, yeah, one-on-one's great, but it's a six-on-six game, especially in the box. So being able to coach that six-on-six defense and what our philosophy are with that was very similar, right? Having a hot guy, regardless of who's getting covering the ball, whether it's a shorty or a best defenseman, having a defense behind it, right? Not really selling out for all our pulls are going to win matchups, which is true, but we always want to have a slide behind the guys. So I think when we were in the interview process, we were on the same page with a lot of the things regarding that. So excited to learn from him. But yeah, a lot of similar thoughts when it comes to defense.
It's a good thing you like watching film. I'm going to put it that way.
For sure.
That's a very good attribute to have on a Jerry Byrne staff. Let me ask you a little bit about your pro playing career, getting drafted and playing for Sudo. What was that experience like for you, just even in training camp? Because it must have been insane playing with that many amazing players.
Yeah, I think training camp just being a part of the league shows how talented it is. There's only eight teams. So the quality of player that it takes to make a roster is that much more significant and amplified because of how few. There's only 19 guys that suit up a week, and there's only eight teams. So, I mean, not a math major, so I'm not going to give you a number there. But the amount of talent is ridiculous. So, like you said, in training camp, guys are getting cut that aren't making the team that are awesome players, right? And it's unfortunate that it is that way. But training camp's incredibly hard playing each week. Just, again, when you're on scouting reports and you're looking at scouts, when you're looking at other teams, you're like, oh, these are all their best players in colleges, right? These are all Americans, right? Every year. So it's definitely exciting. And being able to play against those guys, playing with great defensemen on my own team, me, the JT Giles Harris of the world, Mike Manley, Jesse Bernhardt, Eli Salama, their other pole. It's an awesome. I love playing with those guys. The defense that we have on the Chrome is awesome. And I learned from them. I mean, there's two other defensive D1 defensive coordinators on our team with Jesse and JT, who's at Jacksonville right now. So being able to bounce ideas off of them, I'm learning even just being on a professional team. And then Coach Monty, who's our defensive coordinator, brings great ideas as well. So even while I'm just playing, still learning, still watching a ton of film. So definitely lacrosse doesn't stop, especially for me.
What's the best Sudo story?
Best Sudo story. At least for this year, first thing that comes off the top of my head, we're in Denver. So we haven't been having a great year for the Chromes, unfortunately or not. But in Denver, we were down 1-0, I think, to the Archers after their first quarter. And that night, I don't know why it felt different, but we pretty much felt like it was a street fight. I mean, it was a really chippy game. It was really aggressive. Guys were just banging bodies. I don't know. It was really like heated game. They're great. And I mean, they're the best team in the league by far for a reason. But after the first quarter, it was 1-0. And he just comes into our huddle screaming, where the F has this been all year? I effing love this. Like, we need more of this stuff. And we're just looking like, all right, yeah, like, if you want more of it, we'll give you more of it. That's fine. Like, we'll do this all day. But him coming into the huddle, just showing that energy, showing that passion. I mean, why is our head coach and why we love him. So that was definitely one of the pseudo stories I loved.
Known as a player's coach, and he definitely
exactly, is. That's for sure. That's for sure.
He's not exactly a media's coach, but I love him. I wish I still covered pro because of guys like him. Like, he's incredible. I've never been cursed out and then respected someone more as the first conversation I had with Tim Sudan.
Had to be a good reason for him to do it, right?
Oh, yeah. No, he wasn't wrong. It was just like, I was defending my position and he defended his, and I was like, it's a good defense of your position, man. Like, good job. He's like, yeah, you're not that bad. It's one of those conversations. He's awesome. I love that guy.
Love respect, and I think that's the biggest thing, especially at this level when you're coaching the best players. Well, as long as there's respect going both ways, that's when good things happen.
100%. And I think running short on time, but I promise I'd ask you, I really need your best Tillman story, because, and I've said this, I'm going to say it again. He came on this podcast and he beat us so bad in the interview. Like, he just ran the podcast, man. I remember after we were done, I looked at Jack. I was like slamming stuff down. I was mad. I was like, he beat us. Jack's like, no, it was good. Like, cause you don't care. Like you have a good, great relationship with him. I'm trying to be like, let's go. Kind of fight him mentally, and you just can't win. So I've come to the realization you just can't win against him. But I love hearing stories about him because he's such a unique character in lacrosse. And I'm curious your best experiential story with the man.
So I don't know what like level I can definitely share. Have you heard any? Like which ones
Oh
have you
yeah.
with this? One that was on
I've
the
heard a bunch. I don't think I can say most of them on the podcast, but
Exactly. So
like
like how can I like what like
I
what
mean something innocuous. Something he said that you were just like, huh.
interesting.
Anything like that. That's all I want.
Just use one nice one-liner.
Yeah.
I
I love it.
don't know if I have a one-liner for you, but I think everyone that knows Coach Toma is how prepared he is, right? Just he is married to the game. He loves lacrosse more than I think anyone that I know, right? So my first year there, I think we failed a couple clears in a certain way against one team. And that next practice, I think that Tuesday, we went over a clear for about not only in the film room for a couple like hours potentially, but then when we got onto the film field, we went over the same thing multiple times until it was ingrained in our head, just because he knows what needs to be done and he's going to make sure that we know what we need to be done just because of who he is and the preparation that he does. So those are the things when I think of Coach Tillman, those are the things that immediately come because you're going to be prepared regardless whether you like it or not. And a thing as mundane as it may seem as a clear, like you're going to make sure you know the ins and out of that right away. So that's definitely one where I think it's PG enough where I can tell you that. That's
Nick, I
fair.
got a question for you. Last question for me. What kind of an adjustment did you have to make from college to pro to be successful, to have the career that you're having at the professional level?
I think it's something that my fifth year I started to like buy into a little bit more is just forget about roles, right? Just forget about your stature on a team or like in the defense, like who cares about who's covering who and stuff like that. Just buy into what the defense is as a whole and the 6-on-6. And that might be like something that's easy to be said, but it's a lot easier said than done. Is like we were talking about, everyone wants to be the guy covering the ball, but nobody wants to be the guys like on the back side or in the back end of it. So coming in to the pros, I think that's something that I learned from Maryland and something I took with myself now, and especially in the pros, that I don't need to be the guy covering everyone's best defenseman. I'm going to, or attack, and I'm going to be the best player I can be and help the defense however I can. And as an LSM now, I'm more off ball. I mean, I'm covering every team's best midfielder, but people don't usually go after LSMs. So just buying into what our defense needs to do, right? Offering ideas when I can, but just making sure I'm the best teammate and best off ball guy I can be, I think was the biggest adjustment.
What surprised you the most when you started playing professional lacrosse? Was it the speed? Was it the skill set? Was it the IQ of the players you're playing with and against?
I think the biggest, well, those things definitely, like I talked about, the high school to Division One. I mean, there's a jump there, and then when you get to the PLA, there's another jump. It might be even bigger, right? Because we talked about the skill set, all world guys on every team. I think the biggest adjustment, I think, going into the pros is learning how to be a pro, right? When you're a college, you're forced, not forced, but you have to go to lift every day, right? You have to go to practice. You're going to be eating stuff. You're going to have dining halls and stuff like that. You're going to be in great shape, right? Especially as a college athlete, right? Just because of how the program's set up. When you're a pro, you got to learn how to be a pro, right? Being disciplined, get all your stuff and all your work in, and being at the best level you can be, right? Because you're not going to be held accountable, right? If you aren't in the best shape or you're not playing at your highest level, you're not taking care of your body, and you get hurt, then another player is just going to come in and take your spot, right? And that's just how talented the league is. So I think that's the biggest thing coming into the league, seeing that level of just how professional everybody is, right? Everyone's taking care of their own bodies. Everyone's taking care of their game, being at their highest level because you know how fleeting this can be.
Awesome. Well, Nick, it's great to have you on the podcast. I look forward to hopefully catching some Harvard games, man. Like it's a great place to go watch a game, by the way.
Welcome, you
If you're
guys.
free in the spring, definitely a fun thing. Hey, maybe Jack and I can get on the mics, call a game, float it
You
to
definitely
GB.
go to Jerry for
Yeah.
that.
We'll float. We'll float it. It's fine. He'll love it. He'll love it.
My talk
But
to
yeah, best of luck playing for him or coaching with him. He's a legend, man. He's
Yep.
he'll you'll learn so much just in 1 year, and you'll keep learning as long as you stay there. And even afterwards, if you're one of his guys, you're one of his guys for pretty much life. So that's the best thing I can say. And great luck. Yeah,
Good luck,
appreciate
Nick, and do me a favor, keep an eye on that Christian Thomas for me.
it. Will do. Yeah, will do. Yeah, how was it before? You guys had him on before, right?
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah,
He
he's the man.
he's going to replace Jack as the host, actually.
Is that it?
Yeah,
You're
that's what he
on
said after the podcast was done. That's what he said.
that.
I was here.
You can go work
That's in
for me.
process. That's awesome.
Yeah,
All right. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you guys so much. It was awesome.
Great talking with you. Best of luck.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one, all right?
You too.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.